Good morning. Today's Daf and Shabbos Kuf. We're in the 11th parak of Masechta Shabbos. We're discussing the Melach Vosa. We are coming off of a Mishnah. Mishnah was in yesterday's Daf on Sadi Tesamad Aleph. And in the course of yesterday's Gemara, Gemara discussed some basic principles regarding the definition of a Rishos Yachid. Having the dimensions of 10 Tfachim and having an area of 4x4 Tfachim. Once you have those base amounts, so then it qualifies as Rishus HaYachid. Gemara discussed yesterday a number of basic questions regarding this Rishus HaYachid. Rav Yochanan was involved in a number of the questions of yesterday's Daf. Having a wall surrounding a Carmelis and then the wall actually being closed up and finished and creating a Rishus HaYachid. And the wall itself, does that have the status of a Rishus HaYachid? You put something directly on the wall. Even though the wall itself does not have the dimensions of being 4x4, but nevertheless it's creating a Rishus HaYachid, does it have the status of Rishus HaYachid? The Gemara answered in the affirmative. And then a series of questions at the end of yesterday's Daf by Rav Yochanan. What if you're doing something simultaneous, meaning to say you are digging up the last 10th tefach of the pit, which would have created Rishus HaYachid, and removing that dirt out of the pit. So you are committing two things, or you're creating two things simultaneously, in that you're creating it a Rishus HaYachid, and you're also picking it up from the Rishus HaYachid, and you're doing so at the same time. Would you be chayv or not? And questions similar to that kind. As long as the Gemara was on the discussion of this simultaneity, the Gemara now is going to be continuing with a similar discussion as we are picking it up right where we left off yesterday on the bottom of Sadi Tesamad Beis, Amar Rava. Pshita Li Rava says the following becomes obvious to me, Mayim Agave Mayim Hainu Hanachtan, that when water is on top of water, that's considered the Hanacha, meaning it is natural for water to be resting on top of other water, and therefore that's considered a Hanacha, and that means to say, and Rashi over here on the last Rashi in the Amud makes this point very clear, so im nital miksasam vahotzi hava hakira, that if I pick up some water off of other water, or to put it in simpler terms, I pick up some of the water, so that is considered hanachat. The water is considered munach agaba the other water, and so therefore one has now committed the act of hanacha. And once the water gets transported to another area and placed down in the other area, that would be considered the. When you pick it up, that's considered the akira, and when you put it down, that would be considered the hanacha. And egos al gabe mayim lav hainu hanachtan. When you have a nut that is in water, that's not considered the hanacha. Now, the nut's going to be floating in the water, but as far as halacha is concerned, it's not considered munach. It's not considered stationary. Rashi on the very top of Kufam and Aleph writes, v'inadlu misham lav akira hi. It's not considered an akira when you take the nut and pick it up from the water, since it is not considered its natural stationary location. So therefore, it is not considered a hanacha, and by picking it up, it's not considered an akira. Fine. So when looking at what is considered an akira, what is considered a hanacha, you have to look at the two items, the item that you are picking up and the item that it's situated on. Is it considered a chib, or is it considered a connection, or is it not considered a connection? Water, a word on top of water is considered a chibur. A nut floating on top of water is not considered a chibur. By Rava, Rava asks the following question. Now, this question of Rava should sound familiar, as this takes us back to the beginning of the Masechta. In the first sugya of Masechta Shabbos, when we start on Daf Beis and going all the way to Daf Tes, so we discussed the Melach of Hotzah, so we raise a question over there. This is just simply a review of the question, but now obviously becomes relevant as it is sitting now firmly in the 11th parak of the Masechta. Egos bekli the kli tzafa gabe mayim. So let's say I have a nut in the kli, and the kli is floating on top of the water. Mahu. And so the question becomes the following. When I look at the nut, do I look at it relative to the kli that's sitting on? Or do I look at it relative to the fact that it is ultimately floating in the water, albeit it's on the kli that's floating in the water, but do I look at it as floating in the water? Egos So do I look at the nut relative to the kli, and it is munach in the kli, o dama basar kli azlinan, or do I look at the nut relative to the water, and so therefore the nut is not considered a stationary item on the water, and therefore by picking up the nut, even though I picked it up off the kli, but I'm looking at it relative to the water, that's not considered anachateku. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Shemna gabayayin, The Gemara now is going to be doing the same thing regarding oil that's floating on top of wine. So when oil and wine are mixed together, so obviously with different densities, so the oil is going to be floating on top of the wine. Question is as follows: when the oil is floating on top of the wine and I pick the oil up off the wine, is that considered now an akira? Are they considered like united items so that when I pick one up, so that is considered now that I picked it up from its stationary location? So machlokes Rav Yochanan Nuri v'Rabban. So this actually is a machlokes between Tanayim Dinan. Now this mission that we're quoting from over here is a mission from Tevil Yom, and it really is not related to Hilchos Shabbos, it's related to Tumah Tahara, but the Gemara is going to extrapolate. Now let's learn the halacha together as it relates to Tevil Yom. Just a little bit of background information so that we appreciate the mission in Tevil Yom. We know the halacha is that when I have a Tevil Yom, and he were to come into contact with an item, so the item is Tameh. Now, to be clear, a Tevil Yom is somebody who was fully Tameh, and now what he has already done is Tovel in the Mikvah, and he's waiting for Hair of Shemesh, he's waiting for sunset. Those are the two steps necessary in order to make him Tavor. So once he Tovel in the Mikvah, but he's waiting for Hair of Shemesh, so he's in the intermediate state of Tuma, he basically has residual Tuma. As such, if he were to touch a Chulam, for example, the Chulam would be unaffected. But if he were to touch Truma, the Truma becomes now Pusel. The word Pusel over here is deliberate because we know that a Tevil Yom is a Sheni L'Tuma. When he touches the Truma is now going to be a Shlishi, but that's it. Truma does not go any further in Truma than being a Shlishi. So when I have the Tevil Yom touching food, that is Truma, so the Truma itself becomes now a Shlishi, otherwise known as being Pusel. And now Shemesh Itzaf Agabe Ayayin, so here we are dealing with a scenario where I have oil floating on top of wine. V'noged Tevil Yom B'Shemen, and the Tevil Yom now makes contact with the Shemen that's on the top. Lo Pasa Ella Shemen. According to the Tanakhama, the only thing that he disqualifies is going to be the Shemen and not the wine that's underneath it. Obviously, the Chachamim view this layering of the oil on top of the wine as being two separate and distinct entities. And so therefore, his contact with the oil only will affect the oil and not the wine that's underneath it. Rav Yochanan Menuri Omer Shneim Chibur Zelazet. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that they're considered connected to one another. According to Rav Yochanan Menuri, when the Tevil Yom touches the oil, not only does the oil become pasul, but if the wine underneath was wine which is truma, that also becomes pasul as well. What we have now gained from this mission Tevil Yom is that the debate between the Chachamim and Rav Yochanan Menuri is a question of whether or not oil and wine is considered mechubar, it's considered connected. According to the Chachamim, who view it to be two separate entities, it is eino mechubar. It would be analogous, to go back to a case that we just saw a moment ago, it would be analogous to a nut floating on water. It's not considered like it is its natural stationary place, and so therefore, when you pick the oil up off the wine, it is not considered that it was munach, and it is not considered like it did nakira. On the other hand, Rav Yochanan Menuri, who views them as two, as the two entities, as one singular entity, it's because he views them as mechubar, and as far as Shabbos is concerned, he would view it as munach. He would view the oil as being situated on the wine, and therefore when you pick the oil up off the wine, you actually did the act of akira. Amar Abayi, we continue in the Gemara, Bor Bershus Rambam, Amukah Asar V'rach V'shmona. Let's say you had a pit in the Rishus Rabin. It was 10 tefachim deep, and it was 8 by 8. Or let's, to say it a little bit simpler in this case, let's say it was 8 by 4. But either way, it obviously is 2 times larger in area than necessary, but that's fine. It's a Rishus Yachid. Vizark L'socha Machal Selis, and then you threw a mat into this area. Chayv, one would be Chayv. Now Rashi points out over here, this is an obvious point, because this pit obviously is a Rishus Yachid. And if I'm throwing a mat into it and I'm throwing it from a Rishus Rabim and it lands in the pit, you're going to be chayev. Rashi points out this really sets us up for the next case, which is the following. Chilka. Let's say when you throw the mat into the mat doesn't land in the pit. What it does is, well, actually it also lands in the pit, but in a way where basically the mat now serves as a partition. It lands in such a way where it basically going to serve as a divider, a partition, separating the pit now into 2 separate pits. Being that the pit right now was exactly 4 by 8 tefachim interior, and the mat landed right in the middle, creating now 2 distinct areas. Each area is just going to be under 4 tefachim. So So what the mat now has done is that it has minimized the area, the interior area, so that it created two compartments. Neither compartment is going to be the requisite 4x4. Now, this sounds familiar because this is very similar to the questions that we dealt with yesterday regarding the pit and the dirt. Either taking the dirt away to create 10 tefachim or adding dirt and diminishing from the 10 tefachim. So this case sounds extraordinarily similar. So here the Gemara quotes in the name of Abaye, Chilka, that if I divided the pit with this mat in the way we just described, b'machatzelos, Pater 1 would be exempt. Now, li'abaye, dipshitele de'machatzelos mevat la'mechitza. Now, what has Abaye just taught us? Abaye clearly is of the opinion that when I throw the mat in, so even though the mat landed in the pit and it divided the pit into two areas, neither area having the requisite amount, so Abaye clearly is of the opinion that this mat is going to first and foremost be dividing the area, and then we look at the landing of it. And that means to say that this mat is going to be mevato mechitza. Mevato mechitza over here, the term that's used in the Gemara, we're not going to be translating it in the most literal sense. It just simply means that it removes the status of the Rishus HaYachid. So kol shekein chayu de mevato mechitza. If you go back to yesterday's daf, in yesterday's daf we asked a similar question, where the pit was 10 tefachim deep and I threw in dirt to fill in that bottom tefach. And Rav Yochanan on yesterday's daf asked the question, how do we view that? Do we view that first it landed and then it removed the status? Or do I say that it removed the status and therefore you're going to be exempt from the fact that it landed in the pit? So Abaye over here answering regarding the case of the Mechatzelos clearly would have answered yesterday's daf in a similar manner. If the Mechatzelos, which is just a mat, is going to divide and remove the status of the Rishus HaYachid, certainly the dirt, which is something that is more organic to the hole, to the pit, is going to remove the status of the pit. But if we work in the other direction, meaning if we started with yesterday's daf with Rav Yochanan, now we know that Rav Yochanan was himself misupak, he was in a state of doubt, that when I throw the dirt and it lands into the bottom of the pit, does it remove the status of the pit first and then we view it as it landed, or did it land and then remove the status of the pit? Rav Yochanan yesterday asked a question. Rav Yochanan himself did not know. But that was only as it relates to dirt, because dirt is something which, as we pointed out, is something which is more, much more apt to have to remain there. But over here, if we're talking about a machatzelos, we're talking about a mat where the likelihood is that we're going to eventually pick the mat up off the ground, or in this case, off the pit. So it's not going to be mevatel the mechitza. It's not going to remove the status. So the Gemara says, fine. So Abaye clearly sees it as a question of removal of the status. Rav Yochanan, in the case of the dirt, wasn't sure. Certainly in the case of the machatzelos, where you don't really plan on leaving it there, it's certainly not going to remove the status of the pit. The Amar Abaye, the Gemara now deals with another question. Let's say the pit, again, has the requisite dimensions of being 10 tefachim deep and 4x4, and it was filled with water, and I throw into this pit, which is now basically a pit, but really it's a pool of water, so you're going to be chayiv. Meaning that the water itself is not going to diminish from the dimensions of the Rishus HaYachid, it remains the Rishus HaYachid. Malei HaPeres, however, if it's filled with fruit, pater, and then I throw it into it, it's going to be pater. And the reason why is because when it comes to the water does not take away from the status. The water, even though it has water inside, water does not diminish from the fact that it is still a Rishus HaYachid. Fruit, on the other hand, as long as the fruit's inside of it, filling up the gap area, so then the fruit is going to diminish from its status and it's not going to qualify as a Rishus HaYachid with the fruit inside. Tanya Me'achi, the Gemara quotes and Bryce is supporting this as well. Hazork min hayam l'isratya. Umin hasratya l'yam. If one were to throw from an ocean to an isratya. Now an isratya is a rishus harabim. We used that word earlier in the Masechta. Now the yam, the ocean, we're going to hear this a number of times over the course of today and tomorrow's daf. An ocean has the status of a karmelis. And we'll discuss more of this in the course of today and tomorrow. So basically, if we can now translate the words, not literally, but halachically, when thrown from the yam to the isratya, what you're doing is you're throwing from a karmelis to a rishus harabim. Umin hasratya liyam, or if I'm throwing from a rishus harabim to the karmelis, pater, one would be exempt, obviously. In other words, one's not violating the isur daraisa because the Carmelist is a domain, but a rabbinic domain, not a Daraisa domain. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Im Yesh B'makam Shazarek Amok Asar V'Rachav Arba'a Chayav. Let's say, in the water that you threw into, so the below the water, below the surface area of the water, it happens to be a depression in the ground. Meaning at the bed of this particular area in the ocean, it was a depression that was 4x4 in area, 10 tefachim deep, and I threw directly into that area, so that area now qualifies as a reshus yachid, and therefore you're going to be chayiv. And this is the point that we just got done making, that in the event that you have a reshus yachid and it's filled with water, it does not diminish from the dimensions of the reshus yachid, and it still qualifies as a reshus yachid. Throwing into that area is in fact going to be an issur d'oraisa. At Khan, we start now in the next mission in the middle of Kufam and Aleph. Hazorik arba amos bekosel lamala miyasar tfachim kizorik ba'avir. Lamata miyasar tfachim kizorik ba'aretz. This mission we've already seen numerous times in this Masechta. We go back to Daf Zion, where the mission was quoted. We go back to Tzadi Vav, and this mission was quoted. This Mishnah has been quoted numerous times, but now this is the actual Mishnah itself. Throwing for amos, landing against a wall. And it lands 10 tefachim above the ground. So that's like throwing it in the air. And as we've said already numerous times, and at this point in time, hopefully it's ingrained in our head, the Rishus HaRabim area, the domain of the Rishus HaRabim starts at the ground, but only goes up 10 tefachim. So when I throw it, and it goes over the 10 tefachim area, and it doesn't land in the 10 tefachim area, but it remains suspended above the 10 tefachim area, so it's like throwing it in the air, meaning that that place where it landed is not a Rishus HaRabim, and therefore one is not violating the malacha of being Mavir Da'al Amos Rishus HaRabim. If it lands below the 10 tefachim, against the wall, so then one is in fact violating it because it landed within the domain of the Rishus HaRabim. Hazorg Ba'aretz Arba Amos Chayim. Wave one through. For Amos on the ground, someone would be Chayim. That is called being Mavir, in this case, being Zorek. Dala Amos Bereshus HaRabim. The Gemara asked a question. Now, we're familiar with this question because this question, too, has been already asked numerous times. And we've been giving Rav Yochanan's answer, and we're going to stay true to form right now. V'halonach. Now, there was no hanacha, meaning if it landed against the wall, so how can you be chayev? The very definition of the malacha of being mavir, as in all cases of otzah, is that you need an akira, you need a hanacha. You need to pick it up from an area, and you need to be munach, and it needs to be placed in an area. And so the Gemara says, where's the hanach over here? I'm Rav Yochanan b'dvela shemena shaninu. Rav Yochanan's answer is that we're talking about a sticky fig. A sticky fig where we threw it against the wall. It stuck against the wall. The hanach was against the wall. Continuing, I'm Rav Yudah Amarav. I'm Rav Yechia Zark Lamala Me'asar V'hach V'nach B'chor Kol Shehu. Let's say the following. You threw an item above 10 tefachim, and it landed in the wall, but it didn't land against the vertical side of the wall. It happened to have been that there was a crack in the wall, a crevice in the wall, and it landed on the crevice. The question we're about to ask right now, is this crevice going to be considered a reshus yachid? Now, in order to appreciate the Gemara's discussion over here, let's have a crash course in the idea of Chokikin Lahashlam. Chokikin Lahashlam is a topic that comes up in a couple of other Masechtas. It comes up in Erevin, it comes up in Yuma. Happens to be that it'll be somewhat easier to remember, as in both Masechtas it occurs on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, both in Erevin and in Yuma. And the idea of Chokikin Lahashlam, as expressed over there, is this idea that if, let's say, you have material that is not carved out, but there is area to carve out in order to get to a certain dimension. Over there, the Gemara was talking about the halacha of mezuzah. There is a base amount of a doorway in order for the doorway to be chayv a mezuzah. Let's say we have arches where the arch is cut into the area, so I don't have the base amount for the doorway, but nevertheless, the archways have a lot of material and I could carve into it. So halachically, do we allow ourselves to kind of like look as if it is carved? And this is the idea of Chokikin Lahashlam Achlokes HaTanayim. So over here, in a different application, and now we are looking at it as it landed on the crevice of the wall, The crev itself is not 4x4 tfachim, but there is enough material of the wall where it could make a landing spot of 4x4 tfachim. And obviously it's 10 tfachim high, so do we view this now as a reshus v'yachid? So if I subscribe to Chokik and Lahashlem, the answer is going to be yes. If I don't subscribe to it, the answer is going to be no. And that's exactly what the Gemara says. Banu l'machlokes Rav Meir v'Rabbanu l'Rav Meir d'amar Chokik and Lahashlem mechayev, l'Rabbanu d'amar in Chokik and Lahashlem l'mechayev. So the Gemara says, good. So once we have now our chief participants in this debate of Chokik and Lahashlem, so the one who allows for this halachic maneuver of carving out the area, not physically, but as long as there's a potential carving out the area, so then we're going to view this now landing as actually 4x4, with again being 10 tefachim high, so it's a reshus yachid. And if I don't subscribe to this viewpoint, so then all we have is just simply a crevice. It's not 4x4 up, it's not 4x4 tefachim, and therefore it is not a reshus yachid. Tainam Me'achi, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Zarek Lamala Me'asar, V'halcha V'nacha B'chur Kol Shehu, Ramir Mechai V'chacham Impochim. And the Braisa over here, it does exactly that. It takes the machlokes between Ramir and the Chachamim, and it plugs it in to the debate right here regarding whether or not one's violating the Malach of Hotza'ah, in this case, Hachnasa, when throwing from a Rishos Arabim into this crevice. I'm Rav Yehuda Amarav, Telaham and Lakit Asar B'toch Arba. Let's say I have an incline. The incline is such where you, once you travel 4 amos horizontally, you're going to be going up 10 tfachim. Vizark v'nach al gabav, and I throw onto this inclined area, chayv, one would be chayv. And basically what the Gemara is telling us is that at a certain point in an incline, we no longer view it as a horizontal, but rather we view it as a vertical. Now for those of you who remember your geometry days, and enjoy your geometry days, so then you'll be entertained by the following. If not, you can ignore me for the next 15 to 30 seconds. I did the math, and when basically you're looking at a horizontal of 24, and you're looking at an ascent of 10, and you're looking at the hypotenuse of it, the hypotenuse is going to be 26. Okay, that's Pythagorean theorem. That was easy. In terms of finding out the angles of incline, so if you're looking over here at just simply 10 and 24, 10 being the opposite, 24 being the adjacent, so you take the tangent, actually you're taking the inverse tangent of 10 over 24, and it comes out to 22 degrees. So the incline is going to be 22 degrees. Once you have that kind of incline, so then it's no longer viewed as a horizontal, but rather it's viewed as a vertical. Basically what you have over here is a wall. And so what we're learning together now is that if I'm throwing onto this incline, that is minimum of 22 degrees in terms of its angle, in terms of its ascent. So then, 22.6, by the way, if anyone wants to, if anyone wants to catch up on my math. But the once you throw on that, you're no longer viewed as throwing it on something which is horizontal, but now it's on a vertical, which means to say that basically it behaves now like a reshus yachid in of itself. Tanya Mehachi, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Let's say I have a mavui. Now, the mavui we're going to be discussing extensively in Masechta Eruvin. It will be the first topic of discussion over there, and it will be discussed again and again. The construct of a mavui is that it is an area which has three walls surrounding it. A number of chatzeros, a number of courtyards open up into the mavui. It is basically a street. It's kind of like a street. But again, the development and the zoning of our modern cities and suburbs don't exactly follow exactly in this model. But anyway, a number of chatzeros open up into the street, and the street, into the mavui, which is a area circumscribed by three walls, and then the mavui fills out or lets out into a reshus harabim. In order to be able to carry in a mavui, two things need to be done. You need to make an eruv, actually it's called the sheet of mavos. And also, along the fourth wall that opens up into the reshus harabim, there has to be some sort of either a lechi or a korah. We're going to discuss all this in much greater detail in the Erevin. If the fourth wall has a partition, obviously, then it does need a lechi or does need a korah. And what this braisa is going to teach us is that if there is a steep incline that goes from the mavui into the street, or if there's an incline that goes from the street into the mavui, as long as that incline is the minimum angle degree that we just got done discussing, so then that's going to serve as a partition. Let's see it inside. let's say it's a steep decline to go into the Rishos HaRabim, or Shavla Rishos HaRabim Menasem Ajon LeSochol, or there's a steep decline going into the Mavui, also Mavui and Yitzarech Lo Lechi V'Lo Korah, the Mavui no longer needs neither a Lechi or a Korah, a Lechi, a vertical pole along the side of the fourth wall, a Korah, a beam going over the top of the fourth wall, but because of the steep incline, it doesn't need either, because the incline itself is viewed as a wall. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer tell him Islakid Asar Misoch Arba Vizarf Menach Al Gabav Chayev. And then the halacha, which is the reason why we're quoting the Braisa, is that if I have a mound and it's Mislakid Asar Bitoch Arba, 10 Tvachim high, four amos going across, like the triangle we just described, meaning as long as it has this minimum incline or decline, Vizarf Menach Al Gabav, and I throw on top of it, Chayev 1 is going to be Chayev. Because again, once it has this kind of incline, it's no longer viewed as a horizontal, it's now viewed as a vertical, and so therefore on the top of it, it's viewed as a Rishos HaYachid. Continuing now in the Mishnah. Zarek Lesoch Dala Amos Ben Nizgalgel Chutz Ledala Amos Pater. I threw something, and it didn't traverse in a full four Amos. But then, after it landed on the ground, it continued to roll. And then the roll, the throw plus the roll, ended up getting me more than four amos. One would be pater, because your throw only amounted to two or three amos, and so therefore one is not chayav for a throw that's short, and you do not add to that the roll that happens afterwards. Chutz l'dal amos v'nizgagol esof dalet amos chayav. If let's say you threw it more than four amos, and then what happens is that it rolled back, so you're going to be chayav because your throw actually went more than four amos. Now, the Gemara at this point in time is assuming that in both of these cases there was no hanacha, the halonach. Now, in the second case where you're going to be chayiv, the Gemara is bothered by the fact that I threw it more than four amos, but it never actually landed. That's the Gemara's assumption right now. It never landed. Not only did it not land, it never even stopped. Meaning, let's assume that there was some sort of strong wind that blew it back. And so when the Mishnah says that one's going to be chayiv, the Gemara is going to struggle with this right now because the assumption going in is that it never stopped after it landed four amos. And so if that's true, if that's correct, then the Gemara's question obviously is excellent. So if it didn't stop, so then there was no hanach, and why should you be chayev? I'm Rav Yochanan v'hushanach agabe mashu. So Rav Yochanan's answer is that it did stop. It stopped agabe mashu. Now the language of the Gemara makes it sound like it physically stopped. And it landed and physically landed on something. But if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi explains as follows. Rashi, the wide lines down, the mid-sized wide lines down, two lines down from there. Rashi did Ramasko Shanacha Gabe Mashahu, She'amod Kitsas. Rashi just simply describes it as it actually paused. Ve'achakach Nisgago. And afterwards it rolled back. V'huadin imachzas aruch ba'avir, ve'akvaso me'at. Ve'achakach ichniso dechashiv nami hanachim betok gimohu. Rashi says either it actually landed on the ground and then it rolled back, but Rashi goes even a step further. Even if it didn't land on the ground, even if I threw it, it was within three tefachim of the ground, which we again go over the principle of lavud. Anything within three tefachim is considered connected. And the wind was so strong, the gust of wind was so strong, that even before it landed, but as long as there was a resting moment in time, where it didn't physically land on the ground, but it was within three tefachim of the ground, and it paused after the four amos, and then it came back and the wind blew it back. Still, Rashi over here says one is going to be considered chayav. That is considered a hanacha. Tanya mehachi. Now, the idea that Rashi over here is invoking is because of the upcoming Gemara. Tanya mehachi. The Gemara quotes a brisa that supports this as well. Zarak chusadal amos, you threw it more than four amos, v'dach faso, haruch v'hichni saso, the wind blew it back, v'afa b'shechazra v'otziu pater. Even if it goes back, you were going to be pater. In other words, in the first case of the Braisa, so there was never a moment of stationary as it related to the item that you threw. Achzaso haruch mashehu, however, if the wind held it in place for just a moment in time, even though it came back within four amos, you're going to be chayav. As long as there was a moment in time in which it was stationary, so then that is considered a hanacha. And again, the way Rashi explains it, and we're going to see clearly in the Gemara, even though it didn't physically land on the ground, as long as it's within three tefachim of the ground, one is going to be chayev, because that's considered a hanacha. Amar Rava, and the Gemara now continues on this discussion, Tokim l'Rabbanan tzarech hanacha agabe mashehu. Rava says that although we just concluded in this braisa and in our explanation of the Mishnah, that if it is within three tefachim on the ground, that's considered a hanacha, Rava says that's not ubiquitous. Not everyone is going to be agreeing with that. Let's go back to our discussion here in the beginning of our parak. In the beginning of the parak, we had a debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim in a scenario in which you threw an item from a Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid, with the Rishus Rabbim being in the middle. And we had the debates of Kluta Kamisha Huncha Damya. And what Rava now is arguing is that if I subscribe to the Chachamim who do not hold of Kluta Kamisha Huncha Damya, so therefore, even if it is within three tefachim of the ground, Tzarech Hanacha Agabe Mashu, it still needs to physically land on the ground. Yasa Maremar Bekamel Al Hashmaita. So Maremar was going over this. Amle Ravina La Maremar, and Ravina said to Maremar, Lav Hainu Masnisin. So isn't that the Mishnah? Meaning the Mishnah seems to support that very point. So the Am Rav Yochanan Behushinach Agabe Mashu, and Rav Yochanan himself said when learning that Mishnah, that in order for you to be chayiv, it has to physically land on something. Amrale, Mizgalga Kamar, Mizgalga ain't Sofal Anuach. Avahai came into Sofal Anuach, Afagab Dalonach, Kimandanach Dame. So, to which he responded, no, the Mishnah does not really inform us regarding our discussion. Because in the Mishnah we were talking about, where basically it was, when it hit the ground rolling. And so therefore it never was poised to make a stationary stop over here. Because it was in motion, and because when it hit the ground rolling. So our Mishnah over here does not necessarily speak to the idea that we're discussing. We're discussing the idea where something is hovering within three tefachim of the ground, poised to make a hanacha. And what we're saying is that according to the Chachamim, who don't subscribe to Kluta Kamisha Huncha Damya, so one could have said that since it stands to be munach, so therefore the halacha views it as if it is already munach. And that's not similar to our discussion and our Mishnah over here on Daf Kuf, because our Mishnah over here is talking about a scenario where it was never poised to make any kind of stationary stop. Because the moment it hit the ground running, either further away or recess and come back. And so the cases are not comparable. Just because I know our Mishnah does not necessarily inform us regarding the Chiddush of Rava. Rava says that even Toch Gimel, even within the three tefachim, and I subscribe to the Chachamim where we don't hold the Kluta Kamishon Chadamya, so therefore, in order for it to be considered a Hanacha, it has to actually, physically be resting on the ground. We're on Kuf Amud Beis, and we are on the top Mishnah. More cases of Hotzah. Hazorg B'yam Arba Amos Pater. If one were to throw in a yam for amos, one would be pater. As we already discussed, the yam, the ocean, is going to be considered an area of a carmelis. It is hard to navigate through an ocean, even if you're in the shallow section of the ocean. And so therefore the area of an ocean is not considered a Rishus Yachin, nor considered Rishus Arabim, but rather has the rabbinic status of being a carmelis. And so therefore, if I am in an ocean, throwing four amos, traversing the ocean four amos, so that is not a violation of Shabbos. Rabbinically asked her to do so. You cannot carry four amos in a carmelis, but that's rabbinic, not min haTorah. Im hayarakak mayim v'rishus harab me'alach esbal. Let's say I have a puddle, and the puddle sits right in the rishus harabim. Hazork l'socho dal amos chayim. If one were to throw four amos, one would be chayv. A puddle is not the same as an ocean. A puddle, one can just simply walk through the puddle. And as a result of that, it is considered still part and parcel of the Rishus HaRabim. Throwing it four amos is going to therefore be a violation of Shabbos. V'kamahu rekak mayim. Now, at what point in time is it considered a puddle? Pachos me'asar tfachim. As long as the puddle is less than 10 tfachim. Once the puddle is more than 10 tfachim deep, so then it's not just simply an inconvenience, it's very difficult to walk through a puddle that would be anything more than 3 tefachim deep. I'm sorry, 10 tefachim deep. Rakak mayim v'rishus harabim me'alach esbal. If I have a puddle And the Rishus Rambam goes through it. Hazok besochad al amos chayev. If one throws four amos, it would be chayev. Now, as I read that last line of the Mishnah, kind of sounds like deja vu. Kind of sounds like we've heard that point already. Not only that, kind of sounds like we heard that point in this very Mishnah itself. The Mishnah, in a rare moment, is repetitive. Now, as we know, when it comes to a Mishnah, every single word of the Mishnah is of value. How many times does the Gemara read the words of the Mishnah, making diyukim, making inferences within the Mishnah? The Mishnah chose one word over another word, and meanwhile, the Mishnah is repeating a full line. The Mishnah over here is teaching us that a puddle that goes through a Rishus HaRabim is considered part and parcel of the Rishus HaRabim, as long as the puddle is not more than 10 tefachim deep. So now, on two occasions, the Mishnah is repeating that point, and the question is going to be obvious. Why would the Mishnah have to repeat the point twice? And that's where the Gemara starts off the discussion. Amalei ha'umei rabban la'rabba b'shlama hiloch hiloch trei zimnei. So the one who is asking the Rav the question says, look, obviously the Mishnah is trying to convey an idea by repeating. And the idea that says mahalech, right, is the line that's repeated is rakak mayim v'rishus harabim mahaleches bo. That they have the rishus harabim going through the puddle. And the idea that it says hiloch two times, so he says, I already understand the significance of that. Hakam hashmalan hiloch ha'idei t'chak shmei hiloch. Look, the puddle certainly makes it inconvenient. And it will be a little bit difficult to walk through the puddle. But again, inconvenient, but not impossible. And so then I understand that that's the point of the Mishnah. The point of the Mishnah to repeat the idea that the Rakak Mayim is Mehalech, Rishus HaRam Mehalech is Bo, is that look, that's still where you're going to walk. You're going to walk through the puddle. And it may be slightly difficult to do so, but that's still part and parcel of the Rishus HaRam. And Tashmish Ayideh Etchak Lo Shmei Tashmish. Now, although that's true regarding walking, that's not true regarding other utilities. When it comes to other utilities, tashmish, if something is utilized but only under real dire moments, so that's not considered a tashmish. Okay, so we are more apt to be inconvenienced when walking than we are when it comes to using something. Gemara says, fine. So I understand why it says the word ma'alech is two times. Ela rakak rakak trezimne lamali. But in the Mishnah's desire to repeat, the Mishnah not only repeated the idea of Rishus HaRabim Ma'alech Hezbo, but it repeated the words Rakak Mayim. In the Mishnah, we already knew by the second round that it was talking about a puddle. Why would the Mishnah have to repeat the words Rakak Mayim two times? So Chad B'Yamosek Chama V'Chad B'Yamosek Shaman. So the Gemara says, because we're talking about a puddle, and it's not going to depend on the season. A way we describe Eretz Yisrael throughout Shas is that there are basically two seasons. There is the dry summer season, and there is the wet winter season. And when the Mishnah says that a puddle is still going to be part of the Rishus HaRabim, it is not going to be affected by the seasons, and that's the point of the Mishnah. Because in the hot summer months, where it is hot and it is dry, and you see a puddle, so people are not only going to not be bothered by walking through the puddle, you can even argue people are going to want to walk through the puddle. It'll cool them down. But in the cold winter months, a puddle looks really unappealing. You're already wet. You're already cold. And now you're going to walk through another puddle. So one can say that that's a big inconvenience. And no one's going to want to walk through the puddle. They're going to walk around. And therefore, the puddle does not have the status of the Rishus HaRabim. I could have argued that way. I could also argue the other direction as well. In the rainy winter seasons in Eretz Yisrael, where there, all the grounds are muddy. So when you walk outside, by definition, your shoes are going to get muddy. What's happening? There's a puddle coming up. I'm already muddy. It's not a big deal to walk through the puddle. But in the dry summer months, where everything is dry, and when you walk outside, you're already clean. And you're going to continue being clean. And now there's a puddle coming up. I'm not really interested in walking through the puddle and getting myself all muddy and dirty because I'm clean right now. So there you can make the argument that the puddle is a huge inconvenience in the summer as opposed to the winter. By the Mishnah repeating this idea two times, it means to say that it's an inconvenience both in the winter and in the summer, but nevertheless, it's still part of the Rishus HaRabim. That's one way to approach the Mishnah and the repetitive nature of the Mishnah, and this was all explained by Rava. Abai gives a different explanation. That's true if let's say the extent of this puddle is less than 4 amos. But if let's say the puddle is more than 4 amos long, meaning that I'm walking now through and I'm looking at this large expanse of puddle, and in order for me to walk through the puddle, I'm going to be trudging through 4 amos of it, one could make the argument, that's no longer part of the Rishos HaRabim. I'd rather walk around. And what the Mishnah is accomplishing by repeating the idea is that even if the puddle is long, 4 amos long, nevertheless, it's still part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim. Rav Ashi Amar Yitzrich, where the Gemara now is going to be giving a third approach in terms of why the Mishnah repeats. Yitzrich Sakad Achamin Hanami Leichad Ahavi Dalad. Ava Hechad Alohave Arba'a Mifsai Pasile. Let's say the puddle is extraordinarily small. Now, in our Gemara, we have the word Arba'a. Now, that means Tvachim because it's Iblashon Zachar. And we know that every time the Gemara articulates a number associated to a linear measurement, if it said B'lashon Zachar Arba'a, which by numbers is Lashon Zachar, so then it's referring to Tfachim. If it says Arba, it's referring to Amos. So over here, it sounds like the Gemara is describing 4 Tfachim. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi does not seem to explain the Gemara that manner. Rashi seems to explain it as being 4 Amos. Rashi, in fact, says 4 Amos. Either way, the point is that if the puddle is, let's say, small, if the puddle is really large and walking around the puddle would be just as inconvenient as walking through the puddle, so fine. I understand that the puddle is part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim. But let's say the puddle is really small. It's narrow. And it would be easy for me to walk around the puddle, so maybe one can make the argument over there that that puddle should not be considered part of the Rishos HaRabim because people tend to walk around a small puddle. And that's why the Mishnah has to make the point twice, that regardless of how wide or narrow the puddle is, it's considered part of the Rishos HaRabim. V'az Rav Ashi l'tami d'amar Rav Ashi ha'iman d'zarik v'nach aguda d'gamla. Somebody throws something and it lands, right? Literally aguda d'gamla on the side of a camel, but over here does not mean camel. Rashi over here says we're talking about a daf shebegesher. We're talking about one of the planks on the bridge. And it is along the wide side of the bridge, meaning the bridge is made up of a number of planks. And this particular plank over here is not set on its wider side, but for whatever reason, it basically stood up. And let's say I threw an item and it landed on this offset plank. Mechayev, one would be chayev in doing so, sharei rabim bokim bo. Because even though that plank now is going to be inconvenient for everybody, because as people are walking over the bridge for that particular plank, they're going to have to lift their foot up and walk over that plank. But nevertheless, as long as that's still the traffic area for the people and people are walking over it, it still defines itself as part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim. And so the idea expressed in the Gemara in many different ways is that as long as I have an established route of where people are trafficking, and even though there is a little area in that route which is somewhat inconvenient, albeit let's call it a puddle, let's call it where it's wide, let's call it where it's narrow, let's call it where it's long, let's call it where it's short, let's call it where we're walking over a bridge and the plank is offset, in any one of those cases, even though it serves as somewhat of an inconvenience, as long as people are walking over it, through it, so it's still maintained part of the definition of Rishus HaRabim, and therefore, if I throw an item from Rishus HaYachin onto this inconvenient area, one would be Chayev. All this is explaining why the Mishnah is repeating the idea two times in order to articulate this idea. And here we are now on the Mishnah, last Mishnah that we're going to be covering today, Hazark Min HaYam LiYabasha. If one were to throw from the ocean to the dry land, or from the Yabasha to the Yam. Now the dry land over here we're going to be assuming is a Rishos HaRabim. The ocean we've already identified and defined as being a Karmelis. So basically the Mishnah over here is describing throwing from a Karmelis to the Rishos HaRabim, or from the Rishos HaRabim to a Karmelis. Umina Yam Lisvina. Or let's say one were to throw from the ocean to a boat, the boat here being a Rishos HaYachid. Umenasfina liyam, or from the boat to the yam, from a Rishus Yachid to a Karmelis. Umenasfina lechaverta, or from one boat to its neighboring boat. Pater, in any one of those circumstances, one is going to be exempt, because again, Minatora, you didn't throw from Rishus Yachid to Rishus HaRabim. Sfinos kashur zubazu. If let's say the boats are tied one to another, mitaltal mizu lizu, one is allowed to carry from one boat to another. Im einan kishuros, and if the boats are not tied to one another, afa pishu mukafos, even though the boats are right next to one another, im mitaltal mizu lizu, one is not allowed to carry from one boat to another boat. Rashi points out over here the reason why. Last Rashi on the Mishnah, im mitaltal mizu lizu, they may have the karmelis mifreshe mahadade. Now, because these boats are not tied together, so therefore there is a chance that these boats are going to start separating from one another. Va'anu mukmin ala b'gemara she'asfinu shal shnei b'nei adam va'ayide erev metaltim lezu lezu. Now, in terms of being able to carry from one reshus yachid to another reshus yachid, if the two reshus hayachid are owned by two different people, so the only way that one's allowed to carry from one to another is only through erev chatzeros. Again, another big topic that's going to be discussed extensively in Masechta Eruvin. But to say it simply and succinctly, when two private properties are owned by two different people, the ability to carry from one to the other, Minatoru would be mutter, but the Chachamim forbade it, unless they unified through Erev Chatzeros. So over here, they did unify through Erev Chatzeros. However, it's mitigated by the fact that the boats are not tied together. And so therefore, they are going to be separated by Carmelis area. And we're going to be speaking about this more in tomorrow's daf. And Rashi over here just simply writes, Hilkach ki mefarshe mepaske Carmelis batal Eruv. Because the Carmelis area now is intervening between these boats, because the boats are not tied together, so therefore it breaks up the Eruv Chatzeros. We'll discuss more of this in tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, Itmar Svina. We are going to finish up our daf today. We start with the Gemara. When we are talking here about a boat going in the ocean, Rav Huna Amar Motziya Imenu Ziz Kol Shehu Umimalei. Now, how are you going to be drawing water into the boat? Now, the water is a karmelis area. The boat is a reshus hayachid. So we learned in the Mishnah that although one does not violate the Torah by transferring from the boat to the ocean, from the ocean to the boat, but it's still rabbinically prohibited. And let's say that you're interested in drawing water up. Now, if it's ocean water, I'm not really sure how exciting it is to draw up the ocean water. But if it's a lake or if it's a river, a large river, so you want to draw up some water. How do you draw the water up into the boat? So we're going to have a machlokas amongst the Amoraim. What is going to be the halachic mechanism that is going to allow you to do so? First, we start off with the position of Rav Huna, is that what you could do is you could just simply take a protrusion and have it going over the side of the boat. Now, when we say a protrusion, so really, that's all it is, just a protrusion. It doesn't have to conform to any kind of dimensions. Basically, a plank. You take a plank over, and that will be enough. Rashi describes it just simply as heker ba'alma. It's just a way of making some sort of representation. And through this heker, one can now fill water up from the water that the boat's in and bring it onto the boat. Rav Chisav Rabba Rav Huna Amrei Osei Makom Arba'ah Umemale. Rav Chisav Rabba Rav Huna are of the opinion that no. That the what you're going to have to create off the side of the boat is a halachic entity. An area that is 4x4. Qualifying now as a Rishus Yachid. And that status of the Rishus Yachid just simply descends now into the water. And now if I am pulling water up through this entity, that this halachic entity, then and only then it would be okay. And the Gemara now goes on to explain, obviously, Rav Huna is debating Rav Chista and Rabba Rav Huna regarding how permissible it would be without anything to be transferring from the water onto the boat itself. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Rav Huna Amar Moti Emen Ziz Kol Shehu Mamalik Hasavar Kamalas Ma'ara Mashkinan Ve'avira Makam Patahu. So, in explanation of Rav Huna, we're going to say like this. Now, the ocean is a karmelis. We've been saying that as a tenet, as an accepted principle. Nevertheless, when we say that the ocean is a karmelis, where are we starting from? Are we starting from the bed of the water? Or are we talking about the surface area of the water? The way Rav Huna understands it, we're talking about from the bed of the water. And because you're on a boat, that means that the water is a little bit deep. And the Gemara is going to make this point clear, but let's say it right now. We can assume that the water is minimally 10 tefachim deep, because again, the boat's situated in this water. We can assume that the water is minimally 10 tefachim deep. As such, you are now suspended over the Carmelis. Carmelis is starting at the bed, at the base of the ocean. Now, We learned this earlier in the Masechta, but let's review. Just like a Rishus Rabbim only goes up 10 Tfachim high, the same thing is true regarding a Carmelis. It only goes up 10 Tfachim high. When the Chachamim gave the status of Carmelis, they treated it like a Rishus Rabbim in that it has a halachic ceiling. So now with all that stated, so now one understands that when you're skimming water off the top of the ocean where the boat is situated, you're not really collecting it from a Carmelis. That would have been true if, let's say, the bucket would have gone deeper into the water. But if I'm just skimming off the top, so I'm not skimming from a Carmelis, but rather what I'm doing is I'm actually collecting from a Makom Pater. Now, if that's true, so transferring from a Makom Pater to Rishus Yachid, what do we say in the beginning of the Masechta? What are we saying right now? Mutter Legamre. It is totally permissible. And that's the Gemara's next point. You really don't even need a ziz. It's just basically a way of signaling and reminding each other that what you're doing is that you're collecting from a makom pater. But you don't need it to be any kind of halachic entity. And Rav Chista and Rava Bar Rav Huna fundamentally disagree vis-a-vis where do I measure the ocean, vis-a-vis its Carmelis status. They say that the measurement occurs not from the bed of the ocean, but rather from the surface area of the ocean. And that means the top of the water. Top of the water is where the Carmelis status begins. Interesting language of the Gemara. Maya, water, is Aris Michta. It's basically, it's thick ground. Now, obviously, can't walk on the water, understood. But nevertheless, when the Chachamim gave the status of Carmelis to the water, they were not describing the bed of the water, but rather they were describing the surface area of that water. And so therefore, what are you doing if you were to transfer from the water onto the boat? You'd be transferring from a Carmelis to a Rishus Yachid, which is rabbinically forbidden. And Elo Avid Makam Rabba Kamatatam Kamas Rishus Yachid. The Gemara makes exactly that point. Without you creating a halachic entity off the side of the boat, that Rishus HaYachid entity, without it, you're transferring from a Carmelis to Rishus HaYachid, which is rabbinically forbidden. And so this is our basic debate between the Amorayim. Am le Rav Nachman, le Rava Bar Avua, ule Rav Huna Damra Motziyam, and this is Koshu, umemale. So let's go back to the position of Rav Huna, where all you need is some plank over the side of the boat, and it's just serving as a hecker. Zimin deleika asara v'kamatalta mekamas l'rishus yachid. Can't we imagine? Can't we envision a scenario where the boat's in really shallow water, and so therefore, if it's in really shallow water, even though I'm measuring from the base of the from the bed of the water, but nevertheless, if it's shallow where it's less than 10 tefachim, then you're drawing from a Carmelis. Amalei gamin and dein sfinah malachas bepachus me'asara. So he says, look, that's not how boats work. Boats do not float in water less than 10 tefachim. V'hamorsa islay, the Gemara says now, it's true that the center of the boat is going to be in water deeper than 10 tefachim, but if you can imagine, let's say the boat is approaching land, and so even though the center of the boat is going to be in water less than water that's greater than 10 tefachim, but the front of the boat that is closer to the land may be in really shallow water. And if I am drawing water from the front of the boat in that really shallow water, isn't it going to be possible that I'm going to be drawing from a Carmelis? I'm Rav Safra, Gishushe Azle Kama. So Rav Safra says no. Because when the boats navigate through the water, you have people sitting in the front of the boat and they have their poles and they're testing the water in front of them to make sure that the boat does not get landlocked. And so there's always going to be testers at the front of the boat to make sure that the water is going to be deep enough so that the boat can traverse. And since we know that a boat is not going to be able to float in waters that are less than 10 tefachim, so we can be rest assured that all the waters that are surrounding the boat are going to be more than 10 tefachim deep. And so therefore, when you're skimming off the surface of the water, you're skimming from a makom pater. Am le Rav Nachman, bar Yitzchak, le Rav Chiya, bar Avin, le Rav Chisda, le Rav, bar Rav Huna, darmei, ose makom arba mamale, shofchin didei hachisha diluhu. And the Gemara asks another question, and that is, where do we spill the water out off the side of the boat? Now, according to Rav Huna, the answer is very simple. You'll just put another plank off another side of the boat, and that'll be fine. Now, according to the shitas of Rav Chista and Rav Bar Rav Huna, where I need a halachic mechanism, so what do I do? Now, it's funny because you could have just simply said you'll create a halachic mechitza on one side of the boat to bring water in, and then you'll just simply do the same thing on the other side in order to throw water into the ocean. Now, you could have said that very easily, but the Gemara wants to introduce us to a chiddush. And the Gemara says, V'chitem d'shadil ba'oso makom. So the Gemara says, well, why don't I just throw it off the same side that I'm drawing the water in? But the Gemara says, m'isile. The Gemara says, no, I'm not gonna want to throw off sewage water in the same area where I'm drawing the water into the boat. That's just simply disgusting. So the Gemara's answer, we're going to start tomorrow, because the Gemara is going to introduce us to an idea, and we'll wait till tomorrow in order to see how it is that it's possible that even according to Rav Chis and Rav Bar Rav Huna, one can actually throw the water off of the boat and not need a new halachic dimension in order to do so. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. Let's quickly recap our daf today. In the beginning of the daf, we discussed what is considered anacha, what is not considered anacha. Water on top of water is considered anacha. A nut floating on water is not considered anacha. And then other relationships, oil and wine, one situated on another, is that considered anacha? Is that not considered anacha? That was our first discussion in the daf. The Gemara continued. What do we view regarding water in a pit? Is that going to take away the status of a Rishus Yachid? The answer is no. Fruit in the pit, that is going to take away from the status of a Rishus Hayachid. The Mishnah on the Amud Aleph discussing throwing a sticky fig against the wall. If it land, and I threw it more than four amos. If it lands above 10 tefachim, it's like throwing in the air. If I throw it below 10 tefachim, that's considered the hanacha, and therefore one is going to be chayev. We discussed some big ideas today on the Amud Aleph. Chokikin lahashlim. Let's say it landed on a little ridge on this wall, and there is plenty of material to create an area of dalad by dalad, but it's not physically there yet. Do I employ the idea of chokikin lahashlim, achlokis tatanayim between Rameh and the Chachamim? In terms of an incline, at what angle is that incline halachically going to be viewed as a vertical as opposed to horizontal? The numeric answer to that is going to be 22.6 degrees. The Gemara described it as 10 tefachim high, 4 amas going across. The Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, it talks about scenarios in which I throw an item less than 4 tefachim, but it rolls out more than 4 tefachim. You're going to be patur. What if I throw it out 4 amas and it rolls back? Then you're going to be chayv. Where's the hanacha? And we discussed on the bottom of the Amud Aleph and the top of the Amud Beis the question of if it's suspended in air for a moment, is that going to be considered a hanacha? If it's within 3 tefachim of the ground, is that going to be considered a hanacha? And the Gemara discussed those issues. And on the Amud Beis today, we talked about first questions of, let's say the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim has hazards, but they're not really hazards, they're just simply inconveniences. Is that going to take away from the status of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? And the answer is no. A puddle, regardless of how wide it is, how long it is, as long as it's not more than 10 tefachim deep, the puddle is an inconvenience, but does not take away from the status of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And the Gemara says the same thing regarding a bridge, where one of the planks on the bridge is offset, but that also is not going to be removed from the status of being a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And the second Mishnah, which we just got done discussing, and we're going to discuss in more detail tomorrow, is by throwing from an ocean to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, or conversely, from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to the ocean, so that is a rabbinic prohibition because the ocean is viewed as a karmelis. Same thing is true regarding transferring from the ocean to the boat. The boat's a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. The ocean is a karmelis. That also would be rabbinically forbidden. And then boat hopping, jumping from boat to boat. The boat is a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Another boat is a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. We'll talk more about that in tomorrow's daf regarding the Erev Chatzeris issue. And then the Gemara's discussion is that we know that the ocean is a karmelis, but the question becomes, at what point in time are we measuring the karmelis status from the ocean? Are we measuring it from the bed of the ocean? Are we measuring it from the surface area of the ocean? It's a machlokas amarayim, and that will impact the issue of what do I need if I want to, let's say, collect water from the ocean into the boat, and I'm just skimming off the top of the ocean. Is that going to be mutter, or is that going to be rabbinically prohibited? And that was the debate amongst the amarayim, and we'll discuss more of that in tomorrow's daf.